Good morning. This week is going to be the final shiur on the sugya of Nehemia and Yoyrid. And as is often the case in a final shiur, some of the discussions today are going to be a little bit more technical than usual, but for the hashlama of the sugya, it's kedai, and I think if everyone bears with me for a little while, they'll appreciate the hashlama of the sugya. Now this past Shabbos, I was away. I was at Shabbos in a hotel, and the arrangement there, it's a very nice arrangement. There's a caterer, but what he does is that every Shabbos during the summer, he rents out the bottom two floors of this hotel. He arranges for a minyan. He brings a sefer Torah. He builds an eruv, and he makes sure that the hotel is nicely set up for Shabbos. They cover all the sensors. They have separate hours in the pool. He puts up a mechitza. Everything's wonderful. Now what happened is, and I'm not making this up, but it actually didn't happen this week, but this is a true story. One Shabbos, he notices that there are some people there right after davening, they run out right away. He was wondering, you know, looked a little bit unusual. So at mincha time, he goes over, gives them a shalom aleichem, he asks them what their name is, and if everything's okay with the service. And what he realizes is that there was a family there who wanted a cheap vacation. Now, they couldn't just check into any hotel over Shabbos because they have problems, there's no Erev, you can't carry, this and that. So what they were doing is they heard about this caterer that rented out this hotel. So they went ahead, instead of making reservations through the caterer, instead of paying for his food and paying a premium, they made reservations directly with the hotel. They moved in, they brought their own food, and they enjoyed the Erev, they enjoyed the separate hours, they took advantage of the entire infrastructure that was set up by this caterer without paying him. The caterer was very upset. He said, "You're a nana, you're benefiting off my work, I want you to pay me, to compensate me." The fellow there said, "No, it's true I'm a nana. It's true I'm benefiting. We're carrying in the Erev. We're doing. But this, you have no chasaron. You're not losing anything. And therefore, it's a nana v'zeloi chaser. I should not have to pay you anything." Now, we discussed last week, really two points. The first point is we made is that whenever there's a situation where two people need something, you know, as if before the fact, two people are going to a hotel, and they both know they need an Erev for Shabbos, and assuming it's a necessity. So if one of them goes ahead and builds it for both of them, the halacha is he can send the other person a bill. They both need it. It's like two partners that need something. It doesn't matter who makes the first move. He can send the other person the bill. On the other hand, if, number one, if it's not an absolute necessity, you could survive over Shabbos without an Erev. Or, more importantly, if the first person does it for himself, and then, after it's set up, someone else comes in and has a benefit. There, if it's a zenen of a zelei chaser, the halacha is his batur. And therefore, it would seem that this frugal vacationer should get away with it.
Instead of for commercial purposes, instead of for himself.
That's true. But the person who came in, you're allowed to rent a room from the hotel. It's full of goyim. Now, it happens to be your yid, and you appreciate the fact there's an air of around the premises. But that doesn't necessarily give this caterer the right to send you a bill. Now, there is a tzadon halacha of him, chayiv him, and that is the halacha we pointed out last week of gili daita denichale. And that was, if you had a field that's surrounded, it's landlocked, it's surrounded by other fields, and the outer fields build a fence. So the halacha is, if they build the three sides, then you go ahead and you build the fourth side. Once you've demonstrated that you want this hana, you've demonstrated that you're willing to spend money to take advantage and to benefit from it. So once it's a gilui daita d'nichale, once you show that this hana, this benefit has value to you and you're ready to pay for it, then the halacha is magaglan aves hakol. You can bill you for the entire value of the benefit, not just what you showed that you were willing to spend. So since this person was paying for the hotel, he was clearly demonstrating that it was worth money to him to have this infrastructure and to have this setup, then there's a gili das denichale and the svar v'zelei chaser would not apply. Now we mentioned last week, this is not so simple. Although the Mechaber paskins that when it's a gili das denichale, even by zeneh v'zelei chaser, you have to pay. Tanoi de Behuda and it's the Amshel Shleiman and others, limit this halacha to cases where you're causing some sort of loss. Not as Zenit of Zelechaser, it's the Adgar Mekefi Yisera, where somehow you were the cause of making this so expensive. So then once you show that you're willing to spend for this benefit, pay for the benefit, you have to pay the full amount. So according to the Nari Behuda, since the caterer would not have had to spend any less money had you not been there, the Svar of Gilu Das Dinichale would not apply, and therefore according to the Nari Behuda, you would not be able to send him a bill. That would probably be too indirect. Although we saw in the Noi Behuda and the Divrei Malkiyo that if you're competing with him directly, or if you start advertising, come to this hotel at a slashed rate because I'll provide food there also, and just go diving downstairs, there you would have the Noi Behuda that's a zenit of a zechaser. But if you're just doing it personally, the fact that maybe someone will chop the idea, I don't think that would be enough to be mechayev. Correct. He can probably prevent him from entering the room because he rented that room. Now, there's probably nothing stopping him from standing outside and listening. But if he wants to stop him from entering the room, then he certainly could do that. And he certainly would have the right to negotiate. You want to come into shul, it'll cost you $1,000. Now, the next sugya, which is related to the sugya of Nena, is the halacha of Perei Choy v'Shachaveri, which is a difficult halacha to understand. But we begin with a story which is unfortunately a Maisa Shehoya. A chaver of mine has a relative who is going through a very messy divorce. The husband unfortunately got addicted first to painkillers, then to other things, and is really an absentee husband. He's not around, he's not providing any sort of support. And as they work through the process, it's going to take some time. So this person, see, his relative needs money to live. So he's sending money. He is supporting the woman and the children. Now the question is, if he goes ahead and he provides food, he provides support for the woman, when and if the husband finally comes back, either if they get together again or if they actually have a divorce, is the husband responsible to pay and reimburse this third person for supporting his wife and children throughout this period? So the truth is, this is really an often a Mishnah. The Mishnah says that someone who goes in the Medina Sayyam, he's gone. Now that can be literally, or in our case, it can be figuratively. He may be here, but he's just an absentee. If someone is Amar Uparnesis Ishta, if someone goes ahead and gives support, gives mezainos to his wife, so it is a machloikis, but we paskin he niach ma'osav al keren tzvi. We paskin that the husband, at the end of the day, is not responsible to reimburse this third party for the expenses, for the fact that he supported the wife for this period in between. Why? So the tour that we saw this morning explains that although it's clear a husband has an obligation to support his wife, and if the husband was here, a bezin would force him to provide the support, to provide the mezainos. That being said, if the husband is gone, what's going to happen? So what's very likely is the woman would come up with an etzah. She would eat less. She would figure something out. You went ahead on your own, without anyone asking you to, and you went ahead and you provided her with mezainos beravchos. The husband can say that I didn't directly benefit from these mezainos. What happened? My wife benefited. Had you not done it, she would have found an etza, she would have eaten less, she would have gone to a neighbor. I would not have a bill at the end of the day. So if you on your own initiative went ahead and laid out that money, it was a very nice thing to do, it was a mitzvah, we'll give you shlishi, the Shabbos. But to come back to me and say, I owe you money, no, you haven't saved me any money, I didn't directly benefit, and I don't have to reimburse you. Now in this case, it's a very simple etza. And that is, although this halacha is true, this is what we paskin like, if you went ahead and you're mefarnes without, then you will not get reimbursed. On the other hand, the woman is owed mezainos. If the woman goes ahead and borrows money in order to pay the pay to, in order to buy mezainis, in order to buy food, the halacha is when the husband comes back, he has to reimburse him. So if she goes ahead and borrows money and says, I need to borrow money for food, but she's borrowing it. So if you lend it to her, you have a claim against her. Since her husband has a ksuba, has a claim, she has a claim against her husband, so then you'll be able to collect even directly from the husband. Maisha Enkein, if you don't lend it to her, you just go ahead and you supply mezainos, you give it without being asked, or without, not in the context of a loan, there we say, Hiniach Moisel Karen Svi, and there you would not get reimbursed. Now, it is Machlokes Rishonim, but many Rishonim say that the same concept would apply to any debt. If someone owes money to a creditor, and you go on your own and you pay off that creditor. So according to most Rishonim, what we pass on Halacha and some Kuf Chav Ches, the Baal Choyv does not have to reimburse you. Now, everyone should be asking a very basic question here. We spent the past 6 weeks going through Hilchas Nen. When one person benefits from someone else, what's the halacha? You have to pay. Doesn't matter whether you asked, doesn't matter whether you made up, there was a contract. If I benefit, someone feeds you, you have to pay him for the food. A person falls, he trips, he falls in your and he lands on your hat. He destroys your hat, but he saves himself from breaking his leg. Since he has a benefit, he has to pay for that. Over here, if I paid off his debts, why can't I send him a bill? He's nene. He doesn't owe the money anymore. And I should be able to force him to pay. So there are a number of reasons that the Rishonim discuss. What most Rishonim say, based on Yerushalmi, is that over here, the Baal Chayv can say, it's true, I owed money. But had you not paid, I could have negotiated. I could have spoken to the lender. I would have told him, okay, I could have sweet-talked him. And it's possible he would have written off the debt. Since he may have written off the debt, you haven't saved me, and therefore I'm not a nene, I don't have to pay you. And the Ritva asks, what kind of argument is this? What are the chances? How realistic is it? How often does it happen that creditors just say, okay, you know what? Forget the debt. Don't pay me back. Is this a realistic argument? Is this something that's likely to happen? No. So what's going on? Why don't you have to pay? Zakh the Ritva, and other Achrayim speak this out more clearly. They say like this. Normally, nene means, I have food. You eat my food. You ate my food. You had a benefit. You're full now. Tasted good. You have a benefit from my thing. You have to pay. If you owe someone money, and I pay off that debt, are you directly benefiting from my money? I didn't give the money to you. I gave it to your creditor. He's the one that's directly benefiting. So what am I? What's your benefit? Not that you have my money. Your benefit is that until now you had a creditor that called you up during supper every night. So where's my money? And now I got rid of that creditor. I was my avriach v'ari. So in such a case where it's an indirect benefit. So if it's a solid, rock solid, it's a clear, bottom line is I got rid of the creditor, I saved the money, it's mishtarishi, you're going to have to pay me. But if there's any chance, if there's any argument that perhaps you had a way out, you could have talked to him, you could have negotiated a loan modification, so then there's no direct benefit. You may not have had to pay anyway. And there we say, Parei Chovei Shechaveiroi is going to be Potter. So Maisa Shehoyo Kachoyo. A group of people were interested in buying an apartment in Williamsburg. They went to a developer, and they each put down a very significant down payment. The developer takes the money. He then goes to a bank. He took out a tremendous mortgage on the building, pulled out all the cash, and defaulted on the loan. Defaults on the loan, so the bank starts foreclosing on the building. The buyers see what's going on. And they see that they had put down a huge down payment. And now the entire building is in foreclosure. It's going to be taken away from the bank, by the bank. So they had no choice. They went ahead and they paid off the mortgage. They paid off the mortgage. They then went to the builder when everything was complete. They were ready to close. So the builder says, okay, we have our contract. The apartments are supposed to be $500,000 each. You gave a $200,000 down payment, so the balance is $300,000. The buyer said, wait a second. We gave a $200,000 down payment. We then bought the mortgage, paid off your mortgage, where we each had to spend another $200,000. So our balance left is only $100,000. The builder said, nothing doing. It's parecho v'shachaveri. I owed money to the bank. You went ahead, you paid off my mortgage. It was a very nice thing to do. But parecho v'shachaveri is potter. So you have to pay me the complete $300,000. And what you paid the bank is inyach v'isa v'karen tzvi. You don't like that. Okay, wasn't the nice thing for him to do, but you're parecha v'shchaveroi. Why? How can you make him pay?
It's not the same thing. It's just not paying. So
let's go through some of the different shitas about parecha v'shchaveroi, and then we'll get back to who's right in this case. So until now, we have what we have. That when a person comes and pays off someone else's debt, we say, "Niach Moshe v'Karen Tzvi, who asked you to get involved? I could have negotiated. And the lender may have written off the debt. What happens if the lender is a tough fellow? He's a hard money lender. There's not a chance in the world you can get any rachmanis out of this fellow. You owe him the money. He's going to chase you. He's not giving in a dime." So now you don't have the argument of being mafias. What happens if someone pays off this debt? Can he come to you? Is this parecho v'shachaveri, or does he have a claim against you? So here, this is machlokes rishonim. Some rishonim say, in such a case, if you pay off the debt, he has to reimburse you. Because you saved him from a certain loss. Because there's no way in the world the lender would have walked away from this debt. Now based on this, there's an interesting case. The Tashbeit has a case where a person borrowed money. The creditor owed money to Goyim, couldn't pay. He ended up in debtor's prison. A third party went ahead and paid this creditor, paid off the debt that this debtor owed the creditor. He then went to the Baal Chayiv and said, I paid off your debt, I want you to reimburse me. Baal Chayiv said, no, it's a Mefurash Halacha. You pay off someone else's debt, I don't have to pay you back. So the Tashbeit, it's nothing doing. Because the reason why you don't have to reimburse them is because we say that you could have been mafias him. You could have gotten the creditor to waive the debt. If the creditor is rotting in jail because he can't pay his bills, there's no way he's going to walk away from the chayiv that you owe him. And therefore the Tashbeit says in such a case, if you pay the debt, you get reimbursed. The Aruch HaShulchan makes a similar point. He says if the Baal Chayiv is a wealthy fellow, he says it's one thing if the Baal Chayiv is struggling. So if someone owes you money and you know he's struggling, it's possible you'll be mafuyus. It's possible if he comes to you, he talks to you nicely, you'll say, okay, forget about it, you'll waive the debt. It happens. But if he's a wealthy fellow, he pulls up in front of your house with a Lexus and says, I'd like to talk about this debt, you're not going to be very accommodating. And therefore, the Aruch HaShulchan paskens in such a case where the Baal Chayiv is an Ish Amid, is someone who clearly everyone knows can afford to pay the debt, he says, this halacha will not apply either. Taisvis argues. Taisvis says, even if the Baal Chayiv is dochok, even if he's a tough person, even if everyone knows he has no rachmanos, he says still someone that pays the debt will not get reimbursed. And he explains because the debtor can say that, listen, I have a lot of friends, I have a lot of family members, and when push comes to shove, if they saw that I was that I had a problem, they would have bailed me out. You came along, you paid off that debt. You didn't really save me anything. They would have bailed me out. I'm not sure why they're not bailing him out now. But I'll kopon him because it's possible that someone would have bailed me out. He says that is enough, and the Baal Chayiv does not have to reimburse him. Now again, this can only be understood in the context of what we said from the Ritva, that really there's no direct benefit. It's only the fact that I saved him from a creditor. So Taisus holds if there's any way out, even though it's not very likely, still Pareya Choyva is going to be potter.
Well, if that argument is true, then the friends and family should have to reimburse him. He saved the friends and family members. They would have been.
Which friend? Everyone's going to... Each of his friends, he's going to lose his friends very quickly. That's the halacha. But his point is like this. No one asked you to get involved. No one asked you to pay this debt. What's your argument? And I didn't get the money. My creditor got the money. He probably benefited more than me. What's your argument that there's money, extra money in my pocket because of what you did? If there's any argument, if there's any way how I could have somehow gotten it, my friends would have, it wouldn't have, my relatives, Taisa says that's enough. I don't have to reimburse it. So this itself is a machlokes. By a baal chayv dochuk is a machlokes, and la lochet is seka dedinim. The next question is, what happens if the baal chayv has a mashkin? He has collateral. So over here also, what is the likelihood that a lender that has collateral is going to release the collateral and just cut a deal? So really the same argument would apply. The reason is that maybe the lender will cut a deal, so when he has collateral, it's very unlikely for him to cut a deal. However, if the argument is that your friends and family would have bailed you out, so it's possible, even with collateral, they would bail you out. We got to that. So this is another machlokes. If the lender has collateral, it is again a machlokes, and halacha it is a sveka d'dina, and therefore, although there are shitas that say that this whole svara won't apply because no lender is going to write off the debt when he has good collateral, still it is a sveka d'dina. Excuse me? No, Ariv is a separate halacha, especially when Ariv Koblin can always pay on his own. And a regular Ariv may first have to talk to the borrower, but Arvas has a special halakha because you're not just on your own. The point of Perei Chayva is no one asked you to get involved. You went ahead, you decided to pay it off, you're not going to have a very strong claim against the debtor. On the other hand, when you were an Ariv, you are involved, you're on the hook, you have liability to the lender, then the whole dynamics shift. Very good. So there is like this. There is the Levush speaks out that in a case where it's clear, it's where the debtor could clearly negotiate, and the case over there was the guy in the minhag was they would let you pay over time. So there the Levush says even in worst case scenario, there's a mashkin. It's balchiv dochuk. You don't have al pidin your chayiv. You're never chayiv to pay more than you would have had to pay the creditor. And therefore, if you have such a case, in case of a mortgage, if you hold that there's no parei chayvei, but if the norm is you can negotiate, you can work out a settlement, and there'll be a loan modification, you certainly would not have to reimburse him for more than what that settlement would have been.
I'm talking about for that settlement.
Fine. So if there is a minimum number, so less than that, there's no mafias. So if the svara is mafias, then enachami. If the svara is my relatives would have bailed me out, or the other svaras, or you meant it as a mitzvah, then it wouldn't apply. But that would really depend on those shitas. Now a third machlokes is what happens if the lender is a goy. So here the Ramah paskins, if the lender is a goy, the svara does not apply. Again, the argument seems to be that goyim are not mevater very quickly. They're not going to just write off the debt, and therefore the svar of mefayis will not apply. The shach argues. The shach learns the goy is talking about a very specific case. So again, although the Ramah paskins lahalacha that when the lender is a goy, this halacha would not apply. The shach holds. You can still say perhaps the person paying it meant it as a mitzvah, and the shach holds you would still be pater. Now going back to our builder, so what's the halacha of the builder? Sounds like he's off the hook because these clients pay the money. It's parei chayv shachavera. It's not like this. The first point is there was clearly a case of bal chayv doichik. The creditor, the bank, was foreclosing on the building. They weren't waiving anything. They had collateral. But as we pointed out, it's a machlokes. Even when there's collateral, you can argue that maybe my friends would have bailed me out. Maybe you meant for a mitzvah. The bank over there was a goy. Now, but when the creditor is a goy, the Ramah paskins also these halachos do not apply. But again, the shach argues it's a machlokes. And if you're coming to be mitzi, it's going to be a bit difficult. Now, that being said, I think in this case, there is a pretty strong argument to be mechayev. Because what's the reason why, when it's collateral, or when it's a baal chayv doichik, what are the shitas that say that you're still pater? So what is it? Your friends would have bailed you out. Now over here, this loan, it was a non-recourse loan against the building. The loan was worth more than the builder's equity in the building because he already had a contract, and it was more kedai for him to walk off with the money than to pay it back. Does it make any sense for his friends and family to bail him out by paying off his non-recourse loan? No, he didn't benefit any from them paying it. It's the buyers, the purchasers of the building, they're the ones that benefited from paying off the loan. So in such a case where there's no pshat, it makes absolutely no sense for friends to come in and pay off a non-recourse loan when he's not the beneficiary. It could be in such a case even the svar of Taiz will not apply. And l'kulei alma, it could be that there is that he would be chayiv to pay.
Well, the
Hanoi is he's now in a position where he's able to sell the building. He's selling these units at a profit. Certainly, he doesn't have to lose money off it. If you're right, he won't have to lose off if they paid off the mortgage, and now he ends up losing with the construction. But now, what about the last argument? The Shach has a third argument that the reason why you don't pay is you say he meant it as a mitzvah. No one asked him to pay off his debt. There was no, if he went ahead and did it on his own without talking to you, he meant it for a mitzvah. In this case, where he was going to lose, the buyers were going to lose the apartment, it's probably pretty clear that he was not doing it as a mitzvah, he was doing it to protect his investment, and therefore, l'chora pisvaro, you should be chayiv.
Oh.
Very good, very good. So this entire discussion is, you have a very easy way out. If you go to the creditor and you buy the note, there's nothing to talk about. You own the note. You step into the creditor's shoes, and you have every right that the creditor had. The discussion here is that's not what you did. You didn't buy the note. You just paid it off. When you pay it off, there's no kinyan, and now you're turning to the debtor and saying, "Pay me as nana." You had benefit. Then we have to discuss prayer chloy v'shachaveroi.
But if
excuse me? But correct. It was probably non-recourse as well. But then they would step into the creditor's shoes and they would act like him. Correct. But in this case, they didn't purchase it. So there we have to deal with nana. That's where these problems begin. But if you're ever in such a situation, you're paying off someone's debt, make sure to buy the note. Now, it is a little bit complicated. The halachos would be about buying a choyv, unique siva, mesira. There's a process. But it's something to keep in mind if
the developers are discussing, I'll probably sell the bank, it's really a Jewish owned bank, and the whole claim is mostly interest through the tax claim. And so, there's no right to claim the note.
Well, it was non recourse. So, if it was a non recourse loan, according to the Igros Moshe, there's no problem with Ribbis. What?
He was
being from. I'm the other person's cheshbon, right? We've had such DNA Torah. That's true, but usually if you have a loan against a property and you sell the property, it's due right away. So it's, but if there are other terms or conditions, then whatever it is, it is. So this is the halacha parei choy v'shchaveira. If you do it on your own, you volunteer and you pay. You were never asked to do it. You're going to have a hard time recovering unless it is 1,000% guaranteed that you're saving him from a loss. Now there is a related halacha. If a person is captured, he's being held for ransom. And you are paid to him, you save him from captivity. So there the halach is, although there's a mitzvah of pidyon shvuyim, if the shavuy, if the person who's in jail has the financial ability, he has to reimburse you for ransoming him. You only have to ransom him. Money has to come out of your pocket only if he's an ani. If he has the money, he has to reimburse you. Now over here, the Rishonim ask, why isn't this like pareh choy v'shachaveroi? This fellow owes money. He's being held as ransom. You're going ahead. You're paying off that debt. You should be off the hook. What? Very good. So the way they say is, it's one thing about choyv. You owe someone money. So you'll be mafayis him. You'll work something out. Your friends will bail you out. You have all sorts of other reasons. There's a possibility that you'll escape. Over here, the person's rotting in jail already. He was captured. Once he's in jail, he clearly doesn't have a way out. If you go ahead and you save him, there you have the right to go ahead and demand to be reimbursed. Now, in addition, we had the shach that said that the reason why you don't get repaid is we say if you did it on your own, then you must have meant it for a mitzvah. Meant it for a mitzvah? You're being nice, you can't ask for reimbursement. Zak the nesivus. You can only say that when your friend has a mortgage. Do you have a chiyuv to pay off your friend's mortgage? No. It's his debt, it's his chayiv. You don't have to go ahead and walk around paying people's debts. If you go ahead and do that without making any deal with him, without saying anything, then there's at least a possibility you meant it as a mitzvah, you're trying to be nice, and you have no claim. If a yid is rotting in jail, a person is a chiyuv of pinyan shvuyim. Torah says you don't have a choice. You have to go do this. So if you go ahead and do this, we can't say, oh, if you did it, you're probably being nice. You did it because you have a chiyuv to do it. So if the chiyuv to do it is, you have a chiyuv to do it, but you don't have to spend your own money, you can get reimbursed. So then, after you do the mitzvah, you certainly have the right to turn around and say, I did it because of the chiyuv pinyan shvuyim, now go ahead and repay me. It's only when I went ahead, I paid your debt, where I have no chiyuv to go pay your chayvus, there we say, if I did it on my own, and I don't get reimbursed.
What about the case where a guy pays a bond?
Let me just... And the Ramah adds another interesting halacha over here, and that is when a person is in jail, there's a pinyan shvuyim. So the first person comes out of jail, and you ask him to repay you for the ransom. And he starts telling you, no, the way I understand the sugya and simuk of Parei Chol V'Shchaveira, I'm really potter. And he doesn't want to pay. The halacha is, you have Bezdin can force him to pay first and litigate about it afterwards. If you have any reasons why you hold your potter, still Bezdin will force him to pay. And then if you want to go after the person that ransomed you, you can bring him to a dentaira and try to establish why you shouldn't have paid. But you have to pay first. And the reason for that is simple. It's a tikkun olam. If the halacha was that when you're paid to someone, he doesn't have to pay until you bring him to Bezdin and prove that he's responsible, no one would ever do pinyan shvuyim. Because who knows whether or when you'll ever see your money. Therefore, the halacha is you pay first. Bottom line is you were in jail, you were captured, he saved you. You have to reimburse him. Now, if you have any tinyus, tviyus, you want to argue in Bezdin for the next 20 years, you do that after the other person is ready, holding on to the money.
You wouldn't have the money. What about the case where the bond, he pays a bond, so he didn't go to jail yet?
I would say it's the same opinion. If, to the extent that there's a chiyuv pinyan shvuyim, he's being held shalakidin or whatever the gedorim are, so you saved him from jail, you have the right to demand reimbursement. When you post a bond, usually he's already in court, he's already captured, if you will, and now they're releasing him. So that would be the same thing.
He didn't have
it accessible. He wasn't liquid. He had the assets, so you can force him to go ahead, sell. But the case was where he was able to do it. There is a whole discussion. There is a halacha when you pay the shvuyim. Is there an obligation to pay to do it for an infinite amount? It will depend whether he's being held. If his life is in danger, that's one thing. If it's just being held for other reasons, that's another issue. There is a whole sugya about, and if you go above what you're mechuyev to, there is such an argument. Now this is a sugya of parei achoy v'shechaveira. You voluntarily go ahead and pay off someone else's debts. There's a related sugya of nitvas achaveiroi. We're just to introduce it with there are a number of tshuvas with similar cases. There were two people who were doing business with the local governor, and they sold him horses. Ruvain was a nice erlucha yid, sold him a bunch of nice, good, healthy horses, charged him a fair price. At the same time, Shimon also sold the same governor horses. Shimon was a crook, and the horse that he sold him was lame, and it was on his deathbed. The governor buys the horses, comes, wakes up the next morning, checks the stable, and he sees two of the horses are dead. Now the governor immediately got very upset. He realized that the Jews had taken advantage of him. So he takes the dead horses, he drops them off on Reuven's front lawn, goes into Reuven's stable, takes two good horses, and goes off. Reuven wakes up. Now Reuven was the honest fellow. He sold perfectly good horses. So Reuven calls Shimon to a din Torah. And Reuven tells Shimon that it's your fault that the governor came after me and took my horses. I want you to reimburse me for these horses. So over here there's a halacha of hanitvas al chavera. If one person owes another person money, a yid, a guy, it doesn't make a difference. And the guy, in order to collect from, can't collect from the first person. So he grabs money from another person. The halacha is, there is absolutely no liability. Because we feel very bad for Reuven. A guy stole two horses from him. And if Reuven wants to bring the guy, sue the guy, and recover, I sold you good, or you had no right to steal my horses, I did nothing wrong, let him do that. Now it happens to be, Shimon is a ganav. But Shimon didn't steal from Reuven. Shimon ripped off the guy. But that doesn't make Shimon responsible to Reuven. It's two separate issues. And therefore, Shimon can tell Reuven, listen, you have a problem with the guy, you go after the guy. If the guy has a problem with me, I'll deal with the guy. But I don't have to pay you. You have no direct claim against me because it was taken from you. It wasn't taken from me. Just like if a person gets into a fight with a guy and the guy gets angry, goes over to another yid and punches him. So you can't go ahead and have a claim against the first yid that you caused the guy to be mazik me. Mazlech agaram. He got angry, he punched you, we feel bad for you, go sue the guy. What do you want from me? So in this case as well, since Shimon did not do anything to Reuven, it was just that Reuven was assets were seized because of a debt that Shimon had, the halacha is, Shimon is pater. Now, that being said, Chacham Tzvi Paskins, there's nothing wrong with Reuven telling the guy, but you should know, what's going on? I sold you perfectly good horses. Now, when he tells the guy that, the guy will probably figure out, if Reuven sold me good horses, then Shimon's the thief. And the guy may go ahead and go after Shimon. If he wants to, there's nothing, Chacham Tzvi says, there's nothing wrong with doing that to protect yourself. But if the guy doesn't care, he says, I don't care. I have my horses, you Jews fight it out. So in that case, the bottom line is, Shimon did nothing to Reuven. Shimon did not steal anything from Reuven, and therefore Reuven would have no claim against him. But he's wrong. The guy is wrong. The bottom line is the guy is a ganav.
But it was the other guy's thing, the gorum.
It's true, it's a gram. But it's mazloi gorum. It's very indirect. What? I don't even know if it would be grama. Because at the time that he did it, he had no reason to assume the guy is going to go after Reuven. He has bad mazel. The same way that he goes after Levi. He just, okay, you're a Jew, I'm getting the money from the next Jew he meets, he grabs it back. So we feel bad for him. And so now here we have a very basic question. And that is, what happens if you owe someone money? That person owes a third person money. Can the third person go directly to you and say, pay up? Shibud Ramnasan, exactly. The common example, which we're not going to discuss the halacha lamaisa, because A, it's complicated, and B, I'll get run out of town, is you have a yeshiva. Now yeshivas pay rebbeim, they collect their tuition, they pay their rebbeim. Now unfortunately, very often what happens is the yeshiva will fall behind, and their rebbeim are not getting paid. So what will occasionally happen is a rebbe will go over to one of the parents who has a student in his class and say, listen, you're paying tuition to mechanech your children. Now your child, I'm the one that does the chinuch. I have not been getting paid. So instead of you paying the yeshiva, you owe the yeshiva money tuition. Yeshiva owes me money for my salary. Pay me directly. Shibud Rav Nosson. Sounds like a good argument. Now again, there are many halachas and details of Shibud Rav Nosson, but conceptually that's the halacha of Shibud Rav Nosson, that the Baal Choyv, the creditor, can go after his Baal Choyv's Baal Choyv, his debtor's debtor. He has the right to go directly and cut out the middle person. Problem over here is, what happened in this case? Shimon ripped off a guy. That means if the guy brought Shimon to a din Torah, what would happen? The guy would win. He'd recover. The guy then went ahead and stole money from Reuven. So if Reuven would bring the guy to a din Torah, what would happen? The guy would have to pay. So the question is, why don't we say Shibud Rav Nosson? It's true, Hanitzvah Sachaderoi. Shimon's not responsible for the fact that Goy stole my horse. But the Goy is. And therefore, the same way I can collect from the Goy, let me go to the Goy's Baal Choyv, which is Shimon, who stole from the Goy, and let me collect it directly. What? What do you mean? Oh, very good. Very good. Very good. So one of its roots that they give is that this is all true. Reuven owes Shimon. Shimon owns Levi. So Levi can go directly to Reuven. In this case, when the guy went and grabbed Reuven's horse, at that point, the guy rode off the debt. He's happy. He doesn't care about Shimon anymore. What does he care about Shimon? He got his horse. So therefore, some achroinim say there's no shibud Rav Nosson because there's no debt anymore. Now, it's a very big chiddush because the guy is making a mistake. If you bring the guy to Bezdin, Bezdin's going to force him to give the horse back to Reuven. Now, if that happens, are you going to tell me that even though he has to give Reuven back his horse, he doesn't have a claim against Shimon? But that is what some achroinim say. The guy doesn't care about halacha. He knows he's not being brought in front of a Bezdin. And therefore, the moment he goes to Reuven and grabs his horse, he writes off any debt that anybody has. He actually thinks Reuven's the crook, or even if he knows he's not, he writes it off. And therefore, there's no shibud Rav Nosson. But based on that, the Nesiva says, it'll come out a very interesting chiddush. What happens if the goy comes to Reuven and there are no horses parked in front of his house? So he steals his car and he leaves Reuven a message. I have the car. I'm holding his collateral until I get your horses. So in that case, he didn't write off any debt. He just grabbed a mashkin. So there, the Nesiva says, there would be Shibud Rav Nosson, and there, Reuven can recover from Shimon because of Shibud Rav Nosson, because the guy owes Reuven, Shimon owes the guy, and therefore you'd be able to recover that way. The guy took collateral. Instead of collecting the debt, and in which case we say he released Shimon, the guy just grabbed collateral. From Reuven, right. So in that case, the guy still has a claim against the ganav. He just thinks he has collateral. Might be, it's from the wrong person. But since he didn't wipe off the debt, there still is a claim. Okay, so shibud and rasin, there are a lot of details. We'll get to that eventually. But I just want to. The Chacham Shlomoy over here says another chiddush. He says that shibud and rasin does not apply when there's a guy in the middle. It's a halacha, it's a pasuk, it's a special lima that applies only when the parties are Jewish. Again, there are differences. There are really three cases. The goy can be in the first position, the second, or the third. The Chacham Shlomo says when the goy is in the middle position, he has a chiddush that there's no shibud Rav Nosson, and that's why, in this case, there would be no claim. But again, either way, Reuven certainly has the right to tell the goy there was a mistake and try to convince him to return the horse to him and then go after Shimon. Chacham Tzvi says that would be mutter. Okay, so we're going to stop here. This is the end of the sugya of Nana. Next week in Mirat Hashem, we're going to start the sugya of extortion, which is unfortunately more, as we go through the halachas, we'll see it's a lot more common, that it doesn't have to be some mafia fellow with holding a gun to your head. We'll see there are a lot more subtle cases of extortion which come up a lot more often.